Hello and welcome to Press TV with me. I'm Ken Livingston, standing in George Galloway here on Clement. From last week, we started broadcasting on Colourful Radio. Let me welcome our listeners to Colourful Radio as well. Tonight, we'll be looking here in the UK about the heavy-handed G8 policing tactics. And London is also hosting a mass anti-hunger rally ahead of the G8 summit in Northern Ireland. Yet again, Israel is threatening to build yet more illegal settler units on the West Bank. And finally, in Turkey, the Prime Minister Recep Erdogan issues a last warning to the Taksim Square protesters. When you call in, make sure you make the volume on your radio down to zero or switch it off altogether, or neither of us will be able to hear each other. You can call me on +44 208 601 4555, or text me on +44 7800008066. Remember, this number is for the show only. You can also email me at comment@presstv.co.uk. And there we begin once again looking at the whole issue of the way the world is run by a few great powers meeting regularly as the G8 and planning the situation about how the world economy be run. And increasingly over the decades, I think there's been more and more disillusion by people as they look at the situation that the poor nations of the world are excluded from any input into this. And once again, that the rich nations rig the terms of trade and the terms of debt, all of that in their own interests. Now that world is beginning to erode as the emergence of powers like China and India and Brazil and the influence of Europe and America gets a bit less. But the anger that this injustice has triggered has meant, I mean, virtually every time there's a G8 summit, there are protesters, usually defined as anti-capitalists, but protesting against the continuing injustice. If you feel that that's justified, give me a call. We'd like to hear your views on that. Or if you think that the police tactics to prevent disruptions that might become violent are justified, we'd like to have a balanced debate about all of this. Then, of course, there's the question of settlements in the illegally occupied West Bank by Israel. This has gone on now for nearly 50 years since the war launched by Israel in 1967. And one of the things that I remember as a young man at that time was how massive the support was across the Western world for Israel. Much of that has now eroded because of the increasing intransigence of one Israeli government after another, not since the assassination of Prime Minister Rabin, who was seriously talking about a deal, have we seemed to have a government led by someone with the courage to do a deal to end the injustice meted out to the Palestinians. We have our first caller, Mahmoud from Sweden. Hello, Mahmoud.
Hello, Alison. Yes, it's my pleasure to have me comment. Well, I'd like to comment about this G8. Long time ago, before the collapse of the Soviet Union, it used to be G7. And all those G7 are, all of them are member of NATO, and including Japan, which is pro-American ally. And when the collapse of Soviet Union, they made it G8. They have included Russia. Well, I think now the second and the emerging economy is China. As you said before, that China is not included. India and Brazil, they are not included. Instead, they made another group called G20. My point here is that it's not the West or NATO country should decide the economy. That's the greatest mistake that we have, and the IMF. Well, it's a good idea they made this, what they call BRICS, free from IMF, that if something will come out, will rival IMF or World Bank, which is decided in Washington, it will be an improvement. But this NATO country will not collapse unless another power, economic or military power, emerges.
I think,
and about Turkey, I want to speak about Turkey, because Turkey is a member of NATO. And Erdogan has become a dictator.
I think, Mahmoud, if you step back and look at this, effectively, the old G7 was a sort of economic side to NATO. And when, at the end of the Second World War, America really then controlled almost half of all the productive capacity on the planet. It was able to set all the rules for itself. Now, within the next 4 or 5 years, America will be displaced by China. America will become the second largest economy. By the middle of this century, it will be China, India, then quite a long way behind America. Brazil will overtake Japan. Turkey will catch up with Germany and France and England as an equivalent power. So the world that for the last 500 years has seen the imperialist nations of Europe and then the United States running the world broadly for their convenience, this world is coming to a close, and we need in place something more democratic that can open the way to a much fairer future, and one without so many tensions and risk of armed conflict. Mahmoud, thank you for your call from Sweden. We're now joined by Michael from Kent, who wants to talk about the protests in Turkey. Hello, Michael.
Hello, Ken. Good evening. Nice to speak to you. How I see it about the protests in Kent is, you know, we've heard all this, seen all this Hollywood stuff about 2012 and the end of the world and all that nonsense. But how I see it was that 2012 was a change of consciousness in people, everybody on the planet. And you can see this around the world now. I believe that the days of the me consciousness is over, and we're coming into the we consciousness, and people are coming together, because around the world they've had enough of the 1%, the 1% of the 1% getting everything and the 99.9% getting nothing, and people have
Michael,
had enough of it.
I don't know how old you are. I was born at the end of the Second World War, and I grew up in a world where people looked out for one another. People did things in their local community. It wasn't all about what you could own. And then the consumerism that had dominated America took over in much of Western Europe. And we've become much less happy. I think many of us have much more than you know we used to have in terms of our wealth. But you're in a position where you aren't actually any happy. I've met some of the richest people in the world, people like Rupert Murdoch. People like Robert Maxwell. I don't find these people particularly happy, because there's always someone richer than they are. Anyhow, do give me a call if you've got a view on this or any of the other subjects we're talking about today. You can call on +44 208 601 4555, and we're joined by Christina, who's calling from Portugal. Hello, Christina.
Oh, good evening, Ken.
Hello.
Listen, my darling, do you think that now that Mr. Ahmadinejad is no longer going to be president of Iran?
Well, there's an election about to take place. It's in two stages.
And yeah.
The presidents are only allowed to serve two terms. He's finished his two terms.
Yeah.
So there will shortly be a new president in Iran, yes.
So do you think, depending on who gets elected, it might change the attitude of the West to Iran concerning the sanctions against them?
Well,
can
I tell you, if you look back over the last decade or so, there's been these constant allegations, mainly coming from Israel, supported by America, that Iran is about to become a nuclear weapons state. And it's been predicted it's always about to happen. Years go by, it hasn't happened. And I think it's absolutely hypocritical of America, which has never taken any sanctions against Israel, who have hundreds of nuclear weapons, that brought nuclear weapons into the Middle East, to impose sanctions on Iran. Those sanctions hit at the poorest and the young. And I think this is fundamentally wrong. We all remember the lies from America that there were weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. That turned out not to be true. And it does seem to me it's taking a very long time for this evidence to actually come out that Iran is seeking to make nuclear weapons. And I think we should actually say we pull back, and whoever is elected the president, and I think there's about 8 or 9 candidates in the field, I mean, the West should start with a completely clear slate and do away with its sanctions and engage with that new government. Thank you very much for that call. We're now joined from Wales by Ramzan. Hello, Ramzan.
Good evening to you, Mr. Limston. Well, basically, what it is, G8, right? They hold this meeting every year, don't they? And they sit down there, decide what they want to do, how they want to run the world. And yet, you know, they're trying to press us all the time with their wealth. And the protesters, right, are only simply protesting against what they are actually standing for, right, the G8. And they want to control the world. They want to control everybody, our own mind, our thinking. And it's terrible what they're doing to the world. I mean, you know, we are the taxpayers are paying for their wrongdoings, okay? And yet they don't get penalized. You know, if we don't pay our tax on time, we get penalized straight away, right? But they don't. Right. I mean, look at Starbucks and look at Google and look at all these billionaire companies, right? They don't pay no taxes.
Ramzan, if you think about this, that you know, you're in a position now where, I mean, one of what Mrs. Thatcher and Ronald Reagan unleashed on the world, this neoliberal right-wing economics, it's all about reducing taxes. And ordinary people, I mean, didn't see their taxes cut at all. It was the very rich that got the tax cuts. But also, they deregulated the global economy so that companies just moved their money around everywhere. I mean, here, our major Vodafone company made something like £5 billion of dividend payments to shareholders, but didn't pay any tax to the British government. And we can't just blame these companies. Governments have done this under pressure from corporations. Any government can change the situation so that people companies have to honestly pay their tax. I remember a world in which the amount of tax coming from companies was about equal to the amount of tax coming from ordinary people. It's not like that anymore. Thank you very much for that call. We're now joined by Fahim from Iran, who wants to talk about the situation in Turkey and Iran. Hello, Fahim.
Hello there.
Hi.
It's very nice to talk to you, you know, pretty well. To tell you about the, Iran's presidential election, I would say that during the last couple of days, you know, the presidential campaign of the candidates reached its highest point, you know, in highest position, you know. Wherever I went, you know, during the last couple of days, you know, in taxis, in stalls, shopping malls, and everywhere, to be honest with you, people were talking about the election and actually the candidates, you know, they were going to vote for. Something which I know should be taken into account is that there is a representative from the two main parties in the country, including principalists as well as reformists, which has made the election more, ticklish and difficult, you know, honestly, to predict. And something else is that one of the mistakes that West has made, you know, over the issue of Iran was the sanctions imposed against the country. I will tell you the reason, which is the fact that more Iranians are willing to take part in the election. I mean, the statistics which are going to be released will be more than expected, which, is 60%, but however, I'm sure that it will be more than that. The criteria that the Supreme Leader has mentioned, you know, have been taken into account by Iranians to choose the best candidate. The last point that I want to talk about, concerning the presidential election in Iran is that our participation will show our powerful response to US as well as its allies, and moreover, it shows all our endorsement, you know, for the country and the Supreme Leader. And to build as a last point, all of us, you know, all of Iranians tomorrow are going to participate in the election to show, you know, our power and anger to US, you know, and its allies.
Well, I have to say, I honestly don't know much about the candidates standing. I've read a little bit in the Western media. But it is so important that everyone should go and vote. Everyone in Iran, most people in Iran, aren't old enough to remember. There was a free election back in the early 1950s, 60 years ago, which saw the election of Prime Minister Mossadegh. And then the CIA, the Central Intelligence Agency, and MI6, Britain and America, effectively organised the overthrow of that government, reinstated the Shah so that the bulk of the oil revenues came to the West rather than the Iranian people. And so, therefore, whether, you know, people think that the candidates are perfect or not, everyone should go out and vote, demonstrate that the government that is elected in Iran does speak for the majority of the Iranian people and can then engage with the United States of America and demand a proper discussion rather than continuing these terrible sanctions. Thank you very much for that. Our next call is Anwar from London, who wants to talk about the G8 and Israel. Hello, Anwar.
Oh, hello. Good evening, Ken.
Hi.
Nice to see you. Ken, there's just two little points I'd like to make. One thing is, you know, G8, in the past, when the G8 held a meeting, whatever part of the world they did, can we understand that was something to do with the economics of the world? But I believe that now the functions and the future aims of G8 would be different. This will come out, you know, after we see what's happened. Mm. Because it is now going to be the competition of the controlling the markets in the Far East and the global markets between, you know, the major powers, which is America and China, coming up. That's one thing. As far as Israel is concerned, Ken, it's a long history we have been discussing, you know, in various years, the ultimate force behind the wars in the Middle East and around the world is Zionist lobby in America and the other portions of it in the Western Europe, Ken. And what I'm afraid is, what the world doesn't realize, Ken, at the moment is, if the Third World War starts, Israel thinks they'll be safe, or America, they think they will be safe. No, I think that 2/3 of the whole earth will be destroyed. And that is the fear, Ken, which I have.
Well,
I
don't think there's any danger of a Third World War, because with the amount of nuclear weapons, that would be extinction for the human race. What is so bad is that basically the United States of America fueled the Cold War, mainly so it could sell its armaments abroad. It still sells the majority of all the armaments trade is with the United States of America. And with the collapse of the Soviet Union, they needed another enemy to sustain that. And of course, they picked on Islam. They started to say that there will be a clash of civilizations between the West and Islam. I never came across anybody, and I've traveled extensively through North Africa. I visited both Israel and the West Bank. I've never found anyone in that world that says they want to see a great global conflict. They just want America to withdraw from interfering in the Middle East. And one thing that's quite interesting and significant is that because America has got more and more tied up in the Middle East, it's allowed the Latin American nations to break free of all the little puppet regimes that America imposed there in the 1970s and the 1980s. I just hope that we'll see President Obama recognize he can't carry on imposing effectively client state governments in places like Iraq or Afghanistan, or even that now the talk about Syria. The peoples of the Arab world and the Muslim world must be free to arrange their own affairs without Western interference. All that has happened because of Western interference has been a disaster, not just for the people in those areas, but over here as we see the bodies of our troops coming back, where they had no real say in whether or not they should be sent, and the vast majority of the British people didn't believe they should be sent. Thank you very much, Anwar. Our next call is Bolambu from the Cameroon. I hope I've got your name right, Bolambu.
Hello? Yeah, Bolambu. What's your name, you. Ken?
You're on
Hello?
Air.
Yeah, Ken, I want to talk about Turkey.
Go ahead.
Hello.
Hello, we can hear you.
I wish to say that I think Turkey is paying for the seniors committed by sponsoring the regime, the opposition regime in Syria. And so I feel that they should also feel the tumor that is going on in Syria, because it did not feel that the regime needs to maintain itself in power, and the one the opposition to take over power, they are taking part in sponsoring the opposition regime. And the same thing is now happening. They should imagine if another nation now starts sponsoring those protesting, that they should end up to leave power. How would Turkey feel? And again, moreover, I would like to show more light about Mau Mau. Last week, I was not able to speak to Joe. I would like to say that if the British are paying for the Mau Mau, for what they did to them, I think the French also should pay to Algeria and the rest of African countries what they did to them.
Well, can I say, for those of our viewers and listeners on radio who don't know about the Mau Mau issue you're talking about, this was when British troops tortured and in some cases castrated Kenyans who were fighting for their independence. This has been covered up for the last 50 years, but now through a court case it's been revealed about the horrors that were actually carried out, and has led to a lot of other inquiries now coming in about similar events in other British colonies where there was quite brutal repression of those people demanding independence. Can I just remind listeners to give me a call on +44 208 601 4555. And on your other point about Turkey, can I say, we have a government there that has won 3 elections in a row. I think they're wrong to allow the development of a open space. When I've been in Istanbul, it's an incredibly crowded, bustling city. And one of the things I really love about being a Londoner is we have parks everywhere. And I would hope that the Prime Minister of Turkey will recognise that popular protest. But I have to say that the precedents aren't good. When people protested in London against Mrs. Thatcher's poll tax, it was quite brutally put down, as were the protests in Tiananmen Square. Seems to me national leaders are always very, very nervous if they see someone protesting in a world-famous square. Anyhow, our next caller is Sepanji. I can't quite see the screen terribly clearly here, from London. Hello?
Hello.
Hi. Go ahead, you've just got time to get in before the break.
Good evening, Mr. Livingston. How are you doing? Yes, my point is actually with regards to what you were saying earlier in respect of our soldiers coming back in coffins back to our land, and the fact that the Muslim world should be left to its own senses to make its own decision, and for the people of the Muslim lands to follow their own aspiration. My point of view is more towards the internal affairs of what's going on in the British politics, and the fact that a new generation of young people are being wasted in this land, and the central government seems to sort of not care about the 95%ers, and you know, it's only that 3 or 4% that end up at Oxford or Cambridge that are sort of you know, in line to run this country, and the rest of the young people's aspiration of this country is being wasted, as you can see all around the country, up and down these council estates, which again, you know, thanks to the legacy of Mrs. Thatcher, we're having to face in this country.
I'm afraid I've got to catch you up. We're coming to our break, but let me just say this: if you look, the rate of youth unemployment in Germany is 1/3 what it is in Britain, just 7%. Here, it's 20%. In some other countries in Europe, it's over 50%. And I do think governments have got to recognise that my generation, which had the best healthcare, free education, and this is a pattern repeated across the Western world. We have a duty to actually make sure similar opportunities are given to get good work and not to be burdened with huge debts if they go to college. There's great unfairness. Anyhow, that's the end of the first part of our show. I'll see you again in a few minutes, just after the news. Thank you. Welcome back to Comment with me, Ken Livingstone. And I particularly want to say hello again to our listeners on Colourful Radio. Tonight, we'll be looking at and we have already had many callers on the issue of the G8 summit and the way in which the powerful nations still rig the whole world economy for the benefit of the very rich. We're looking at the massive anti-hunger rally that protesters have staged here in London ahead of that G8 summit, which opens in Northern Ireland. We're looking again at Israel and building yet more illegal settler units on the West Bank. And finally in Turkey, where the Prime Minister has issued a last warning to the Taksim Square protesters. You can call me on +44 208 601 4555 or text me at +44 780 0000 8066. Remember, this number is for the station only. You can also email me at comment@presstv.co.uk. And one thing that I particularly am struck by is, as an environmentalist, is how important it is to have green spaces in our great cities. And I've been on two or three occasions in the last few years. I've visited Istanbul, and it is an incredibly urban, dense city growing very rapidly. And having open spaces, we used to call them lungs in London, that were able to help make a much better quality environment. And I wouldn't want to see any of our parks or open spaces in London built over by a shopping mall. There's loads of other places you could put shopping malls. I hope the Turkish government makes a realistic proposal to people to actually shell these projects and actually look for a better balance between the needs of commerce and the needs of the environment. I'm joined from somebody who wants to talk about this issue in Turkey, here in London, Sohil. Hello, Sohil.
Hi. Good evening, Mr. Livingstone.
Hello.
I am from the Golan Heights, but I live in London with my rich wife. And I work in the city of London in security. But about specifically Turkey, it's not to build the square where Erdogan wants to build. What it is the matter there? He wants to destroy the legacy of Atatürk, secular Atatürk Turkey. And he wants to destroy the secular of all the Middle East by his master, American. Now, I know the settlement in Israel as well because I'm from the Golan Heights. And I know Israel, unless the world stopped Israel, nothing is managing to stop Israel in any way or another of expanding its settlement. It's only after 42 years waiting to go back to my home in the Golan, the world is ignoring us and ignoring us. And that one thing, I know it's not the topic about it in this way, but I just want to say this G8 is meeting, and all the world are trying to look and focus on it. It's focusing on Syria. And I know Turkey is pushing, specifically Erdogan and his government, which is being pushed by the American on the Turkish people, trying to do the dirty job of the American in the Middle East. Now, we love Turkish people.
Cut in there, because there's a lot of topics you're covering. One thing you might find interesting is a book come out recently called Fortress Israel, which is not written by a critic of Israel and was praised by the Jewish Chronicle here. And I've just finished reading it. One of the things I find so shocking is that on some occasions, American presidents have tried to push the Israeli government to a compromise. President Eisenhower in the 1950s tried to encourage them to allow 100,000 refugees that had been expelled to come back and to give up some land so that Gaza and the West Bank could be united. And that was sabotaged by David Ben-Gurion, the then Prime Minister. And even under President Nixon, who was no radical left-winger, he tried to put pressure on Israel to make concessions. This was shortly after the illegal occupation of the West Bank and Gaza. And the Israeli government organized 77 out of the 100 American senators to put pressure on Nixon to back off. And I have to say, I don't see the sort of strength of character in President Obama that he's going to stand up to that sort of pressure. So I'm very pessimistic about where we're going on the problems of the Palestinians getting justice. Thank you for your call. Our next call is Adnan from London. Hello, Adnan.
Hi.
Hi.
Yeah, about Israel. When it comes to Israel, human rights and international law, and the United Nations Security Council orders, they all go to the wall. I mean, when it's Israel involved, these things exactly comes upside down. So what I want to say is Israel ideology was built on expansion. Now, since the defeat in Lebanon, we see that Israel is shrinking. It's changing from malignant tumor to a benign tumor. And that's because they themselves, the Israelis, believe that things are going to change. And we have so many people, Jewish people, when we go on demonstration, they come with us and we talk to them. They demonstrate against the state of Israel. And they say that in their belief and in all the holy books before Islam and Islam, that Israel is not going to last. So this aggression and this violation of all international laws and human rights will bring Israel to their end very soon, inshallah. And thank you very much.
Well, then can I just say it's quite interesting if you look at the history of this. I mean, for a long time, that first Israeli Prime Minister, David Ben-Gurion, had that slogan, people without a land for a land without people. There was decades of denying that Palestinians had even been there. And after the expulsion, the ethnic cleansing at the creation of the State of Israel, he also said, it won't be a problem. The old will die, the young will forget. Well, the world has not forgot this injustice. And the tragedy is, in Benjamin Netanyahu, we have an Israeli leader, absolutely obdurate, determined never to make a concession. And he knows every time he allows more illegal settlements to be constructed on the West Bank, it prevents any real negotiating starting. And there can't be one rule for Israel and another for other countries. Illegal occupation is wrong, and we need to stand up and continue to pressure our own governments all around the world to actually say you can't carry on doing this. 50 years of injustice is enough. Thank you very much for that call. Our next caller joins us from Nigeria, Ogashua. I hope I got that right. Hello.
Good day, sir.
You're on air.
How are you, sir?
I'm fine, thanks very much. I haven't been to Nigeria for nearly 50 years.
Thank you, sir. Excuse me, sir. The problem that I want to lament here is the issue of the Palestinians. Is it there is human rights in this nation, in the world? The international human rights, where are they? Every blessed day, the Israeli bulldozing houses of the illegal occupier of those people, that they are showing them excessive power, excessive force, and Britain, American are sued by them. Then, the Syria issue, I would like to congratulate the Syrian army that the God gave them power. They are now dealing with the carnivore people that used to eat human flesh, with the backing of Saudi Arabia, Europe nation, and American plus Israel. the Erdogan is the one that supply route to those militants for setting those Syria people. It is now bounced back now. The Erdogan, you see, who killed by sword will die by sword. Till that Erdogan support militants to destroy the Syria one day. It is now his own domain. It is his step now.
Thanks, Shoko. I think one of the important things to remember is that there was the real problem at the end of the Second World War, the absolute evil tragedy of the Holocaust left so many Jewish refugees who had barely survived the death camps. And throughout all of that, the United States of America, with all its land, only allowed one small holiday camp in the Appalachians to be made available to take some Jewish refugees. And the then president, President Truman, I think, feared very much if he allowed the Jewish refugees, who mainly wanted to go to America, to come in their hundreds of thousands, he might lose the election. And that was the core of what is this. I mean, the vast majority of European Jews who survived the Holocaust didn't want to go and settle in what they saw as a desert. They wished to be living in Britain or in the United States of America. And when you had the collapse of the Soviet Union, Russian Jews were told, you can leave Russia, but you can't come to the United States of America. You've got to go to Israel. All this has been wrong, and it's led to a festering injustice, which is completely unacceptable. Can I remind our listeners, you can give me a call as well with your views. The number to call is +44 208 601 4555. Whether you wish to talk about the issue of the illegal Israeli settlements, the problems that the Turkish government are finding now with the popular protests against them, or this question of the power that the G8, the great capitalist powers, still exercise, although that power is lessening with every year that passes as economic power shifts to other parts of the world. Let's go back to our previous caller from Nigeria. Whereabouts in Nigeria do you live?
Excuse
me. Right. I remember...
I want to ask this question. Excuse me, hello?
Hello, yeah. I was in Nigeria in 1966, yes. Just after the massacres in the north.
Hello, sir.
Hello, yes.
I want to ask a question.
Yeah.
The human rights that the American and international government, they are not always incarcerated the Africa president. The same thing is not issued or is not working in Israel and the rest of the monarchy that are supporting insurgents to kill innocent lives.
Mm. Well, also, you wanted to talk about Turkey. Tell us what you think about that.
Yes, because this thing that has happened taking place in Palestine, it is in Africa now. The International Court of Law now will pursue them. Mm. Frustrating our leaders in the name of human rights, but Israel has been participating on and often with nobody. Nobody has right to take the Israel to the Court of Law, International Court of Law, sir.
I think one of the problems is that in America they refuse to recognise that these sort of problems happen all over the world. I'm old enough to remember students at Kent State University in America protesting against the war in Vietnam, peacefully protesting. Four of them were shot dead by state troopers. And there were all sorts of illegal activities by the Nixon government, bugging people's phones. All of that went on. The idea that America is some beacon of liberty that we should all learn from, and that somehow the government in Turkey is particularly bad and repressive. Governments all around the world tend to be very nervous and crack down on dissenters. I've been a dissenter against most British governments for most of my life. I oppose the things they do that are actually wrong. And we need to actually, I think, see more people linking up at grassroots level across the nations of the world so that we can start to mobilise massive support. And the G8 protests really do bring those people together. I mean, people come from abroad to join the protest here in London today. And when the next G8 takes place in another part of the world, there'll be Londoners and Americans joining there. We're now another caller from Nigeria. We've obviously got a good audience in Nigeria. Mohammed from Nigeria. Hello, Mohammed.
Hello, Mr. Hi Ken. There. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
Good to have you on this program.
Cheers. Thanks very much.
Yes, I want to make my contribution on the ongoing demonstration in Turkey.
Yeah, go ahead.
The demonstration going on in Turkey.
Go ahead.
What is happening in Turkey is another revolution coming up in that country. Mr. Erdogan was in the United States of America some months ago proposing arms supply to the rebels to fight a legitimate government backed by the Western world. And today, the demonstration is now in his own hometown. And the same Erdogan is accusing the West or the foreign countries of causing confusion in his own country. Now, the issue is this. Politically, the West have in the past refused to admit Turkey into the EU because of certain policies which they deem that Turkey is not qualified to be part of the European Union. Now, the crisis is now back in Turkey, and the Erdogan government is getting confused as to where to address the problem, but trying to use force as against what's happening in Syria.
What's interesting, Mohammed, if you look at the history of this, it's basically been France which has blocked the admission of Turkey to the European Economic Union, largely because President Mitterrand in his day used to say this is a Christian Europe. My broad view is that I think you should have a separation of church and state. I don't believe that Europe should be seen as a Christian economic bloc. People should be free to follow whatever faith they actually believe in. That's very much the 8 years I was Mayor of London. That was the position I took, that we treat all faiths equally, however big or however small they are. All we ask is that each respects the faith of another. So I doubt if I'd be terribly popular in Saudi Arabia. Anyhow, our next caller is Yusuf from Kuwait. Hello, Yusuf. Hello, Yusuf. I think we might...
Yeah.
Yes. Hello, Yusuf. You're on air.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm on air.
Yep, you are. Go on, you talk to the whole world. Yusuf, are you there?
I wonder how the World Post talk about human rights, and still, what Israel does about the settlement, they don't say anything about, and they keep on doing. So I wanted to ask you know what is going on.
I didn't catch that, Yusuf. Okay. Can you say about it again?
Hello?
Hello, Yusuf. I didn't catch what you were saying. The line's not very good, I'm afraid. Try again.
Okay. I hear you.
Hello, Yusuf?
Hello?
Hello, Yusuf.
Yeah.
Say again. Say again what you said. Yeah, go ahead. Tell us what you think about Israel. I think
I want to comment about Israel.
Hi. I think we're having trouble getting Yusuf. We'll try and get back to you, Yusuf, in Kuwait. But we're joined by a Londoner, Rona. Hello, Londoner. Rona?
Hello. Hello, Mr. Livingstone.
Hi. You can call me Ken after all these years.
Hello, Ken. I'd like to tell your viewers something very interesting about this Turkish government that maybe people here are not aware of, as the British press seems to be very picky about what they choose to put in their media. Yesterday, there was a meeting between the head of Mossad and the Turkish foreign minister. They were discussing what Mr. Erdogan should do about his problem inside Turkey. Also, they were discussing what their plans were and what they could do about the situation with the rebels in Syria being annihilated by the Syrian government, as this doesn't suit either government.
Well, I think, Rona, that part of the problem here is that if I think back over the last 50 or 60 years, the problem in Turkey is there's constant, I think there's been three military coups. People elect a government, it's either failed or been overthrown. This is the first time that you've had a genuine democratic government survive and win three elections. Now, I'm sure I'd have disagreements with Mr. Erdogan on a whole range of issues. But at the moment, there is the freedom of people in Turkey to throw that government out. In the same way that the people of Iran will be going to the polls in the next few days to elect their next president. But I have to say, I wouldn't be turning to Mossad for advice on anything, given their pretty horrendous record of illegal killings and torture. And it would be a mistake for Turkey to actually go down that road. Thank you, Rona. Yet another caller joins us from Nigeria. Shamaki. Hello, Shamaki. Hello. We seem to be having some problems with the line from Nigeria today. Is Shamaki, are you there?
I am very much available.
Okay. Tell us what you want to...
Hello, Mr. Chen.
Hello there. What would you like
Hello,
to say?
Chen. Good evening.
Good. Go ahead.
I am very much available.
Tell us what you want to talk about.
Yes, Mr. Chen, good evening.
Hello there, hello.
Good evening.
Yeah, good evening. What do you want to talk about, Turkey or Israel or the G8?
I want to comment about the human rights in this world.
Yeah, go ahead.
Mr. Chen.
We're listening.
See, the incest killing of human beings in this world is becoming unbearable. What is the government of America doing about it? We're looking onto government... Pardon? Are you there?
We're here. We can hear everything you're saying. Go ahead. We've only got about a minute left. Quickly.
All right. So...
I'm afraid, Shamaki, we're having trouble with the lines from Nigeria tonight. It's just a temporary thing. We'll hope to sort it out by next week. I think that the position we face now is that we're coming to the end of the programme. It's all we have time for tonight. But do keep these calls coming in over the weeks to come, because none of these issues is going to go away. The G8 will still be there. The problems between the Israelis and the Palestinians. And I hope very much that we'll be able to carry on taking your calls. Next week, it'll be George Galloway with you for another comment show. Good night from me and good luck.
Hello, just comment your name and the number. And just make sure that your telephone volume is set to 0.
0, 0. Can you spell your name for me?
Yeah, I know. You redirect me to the phone number and then we'll do that.
Comment. Can I have your telephone?